once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. And I know it's shocking. You guys actually had a day off from your feed. We actually had a day of rest, but in reality, it was a fake day of rest because we're still recording. You're just listening to it a day after we've recorded it for a change, instead of us turning around and burning the midnight oil once again. But this is Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am Mike One. This is co-host Also Mike.
Also Mike, we had a great get in terms of another MMO interview. We got the chance to sit down with Award Circuit's Clayton Davis. He is the editor and owner over there at awardcircuit.com. We've often referenced him in terms of year-round Oscar predictions that he makes available to us and that we use as like a go-to website to, you know, keep you up to date and foreshadowed on the rest of the year to come there.
And Award Circuit is used in every single one of our Oscar Sprint profiles when they have one of the rankings that we use to reflect where these candidates and nominees will be come nomination time. Clayton Davis as well, putting out the annual ACCA Awards. They refer to those as the ACAs, much in the vein of the Mike, Mike, and Oscars that we do here. Those are more interactive and get and listener-based award show that they have over on their podcast feed and website there. He's also the host of that said podcast, which is called the Circuit Breaker Podcast. Just dropped episode 129 moments before we actually had the chance to interview Clayton here live, which is kind of exciting news.
Yeah, entitled Oscars Post-Show Reactions and Thoughts on the Winners. Mike, we've been listening to this show for years. This guy is like one of the godfathers in film journalism from like the ground roots up, which we're, you know, thankfully a part of over this last year and a half. And it's been such a wonderful community on film Twitter. And, you know, he's been really kind to chat with us along the way and encourage us along the way. So this was really cool. But we also had some historic news this year with Clayton Davis, and we reported it on a recent MMO Weekly. Mike, he is the current founder and president of the newly formed Latino Entertainment Journalists Association.
Yeah, so big news, no small feat there. This guy took it upon himself to really heed the call of the underrepresentation of different minority groups in film criticism and the film criticism world. He literally founded on his own this association, the LEJA, like Mike told you, the Latino Entertainment Journalists Association. We had a chance to ask him about that. We had a chance to ask him about what brought him to film criticism in the first place. We had a chance to ask, obviously, as we just covered ourselves, the 2019 Academy Awards and his thoughts on the fallout and some of the lead up to there as well. And it really was just a nice way to put a bow on the 2018 film year and kind of put it on its shelf and leave it in the dust, and really, really honored and humbled by having him agree to talk to us and share his thoughts with us here on MMO.
Yeah, we wanted to do kind of an Oscars fallout episode, and we could think of no better way to accomplish that fact than with Clayton Davis, who's also written for Hollywood Reporter, Variety, New York Times, Huffington Post. So he's a real authority on all things in the movie world, so this is going to be really cool.
A big, big name, big heavy hitter, another one that we're very, very gracious and thankful that he agreed to say yes to us. This is our interview, MMO Interviews, Clayton Davis, awardcircuit.com. Check it out. All right, MMOers on the line. We have Clayton Davis from Award Circuit. Clayton, thank you for joining us. Mike One here. Just wanted to say thank you. What's going on? How are you today?
Doing all right. Two mics walk into a bar, right? And then Clayton's there. That's what happens.
I think I've heard that somewhere before, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you guys never heard that before. I'm full of original content, kind of like an original screenplay winner.
That might come up, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
And if we could take this podcast to a bar, I think all three of us would be doing much better. Clayton, how are you holding up right now? You get any sleep?
Hey, I'm doing okay. It's late now, so I slept a little bit in. I took a nap earlier today, and I was able to catch up a little bit.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so that's where we're going to leave this off. We're going to ask you true or false whether or not you've been up for 48 hours straight or just cut it to 24 straight. So,
oh, totally false. Yeah, Clayton is not well behaved when he is sleep deprived. And I have two kids, so I was like,
oh God bless.
Like, as soon as Oscars were over, we did our like post mortem podcast right away, and I went to sleep. And then I came, and then I take today off for like, you know, just catch up on sleep. And then and that was all right. I was doing some radio stuff today, so it was okay.
Yeah, smart, smart.
So Clayton, you're the leader of two amazing groups of movie people. You got awardcircuit.com. You got the newly formed Latino Entertainment Journalists Association. We have upcoming questions for you on both of those. But first, we're dying to know, how did you guys watch the Oscars last night? What was the mood like at Clayton Davis headquarters on Sunday night?
So believe it or not, I mean, obviously I've been covering this for a long time. But I prefer my Oscars watching to be a little low key. Like, I've been invited to the Oscars I got invited one time before, and I didn't go because I was like, it's not like I'm gonna have a great seat. Right. I'll be somewhere like in the nosebleeds, and I'll be watching it on a big screen anyway because I won't be able to see anything from where I'm sitting. So I'd rather listen. And obviously, Oscar night on the site is like our biggest night of the year. So I like to kind of spend it with, you know, the readers that put in the time and effort to be with us all year round. So I watch it with my wife. My daughter's 8 now, so she stayed up. We let her stay up an hour later than usual just to watch a little bit more of it. We put her to bed around 9 o'clock when things took a turn for the worse. and then we put her to bed, and then everything was fine. So yeah, I grabbed some popcorn and raisinettes. It was like I was watching movies, keeping up with the live blog, and then just watching it all unravel and seeing how wrong I was, because it was my lowest year.
I don't even know why I bothered predicting this year. That's how it turned out.
Yeah. You know what? But you know what? Anyone who listens to you guys and follows Oscar pundits, and then they're going to be like, yeah, you know, you just hang it up now. This year was such an anomaly. If you did 22 for 24, I'm not even going to look at you and say like you're, it's because you're a genius. You just got lucky, because there's no way you knew how all this was breaking when based on the precursors that led into it. There's no way you did. And listen, shout out to like Awards Daily, Sasha Stone, who's like the godmother of all Oscar pundits. She got 22 out of 24. And I think she got a good gauge of the season, but like, there's no way you could have really foresaw like Black Panther walking out with 3, Bohemian leading with 4 all winners, and so forth.
Yeah, we saw her put that out on Twitter as well. My mouth dropped just as much as it did during some of the awards presentations that we'll get into. Yeah. But yeah, it was a rough year for all our punditry. But in your little intimate watch party there, was there one moment without diving into the specific categories yet, but was there one moment overall that kind of got the biggest cheer from you personally that you kind of felt heartwarming about?
Oh, Regina King, no matter what. I said if these two things happen, Regina King and Spider-Man, if those two things happen, I don't care what the hell else happened on the night. That was it. That's all I needed to continue this profession. Yeah. And then it was fine. And I didn't even predict Regina King, and I was hedging my bets because I said if she wins, I could be like, oh my God, thank God. And if she loses, I can tell myself I told myself so. So it was just where I put my emotions on the night. But yeah, Regina King, who, by the way, I think, like, side note, looked the best, like in the best dress. She did. It was like the hottest stuff yesterday. I was all about it.
She looked like an actual goddess walking out with that white dress, flowing dress.
I was like this woman, we don't deserve her. We just don't.
She showed up as like someone ready to win an Oscar. You know, like she had the whole aura and the walk down, and she, I think it was her time.
You know what? You know what's weird? I don't think she did. And that, I think that's what makes her even better, because I don't think she ever took it for granted. I think she knew she was coming in with her back against the wall. I mean, listen, only 3 people have won an Academy Award without SAG in this era of SAG. Only one person has won without SAG and BAFTA. So history was stacked up against her, and she did it.
She was absolutely gracious in victory as well. It was a great speech on her part. Yeah. Just to talk a little bit about the Latino Entertainment Journalists Association that you do. You had, as we mentioned, you had this giant professional undertaking this year in the formation of the LEJA, the Latino Entertainment Journalists Association. For one, all respect and kudos to you for doing this and taking the lead here as founder and president. Yes. Can you just talk to us a little bit about the motivation behind forming it? Like we said, a one-man job starting with its own film association is no small task.
Yeah. So, first of all, not a one-man show, and simply put, because as I'm not sure if you guys know or any of your listeners know, so I'm both Puerto Rican and Black, and I've, you know, kind of prided myself on being a man that can be a part of all different cultures, especially, you know, in the people I grew up with, obviously my family, you know, on both sides. Mm-hmm. And when it came to Latinos, it was just, that was a void in the film industry that it was palpable. And for years, people have been saying they wanted to do this. And I've gotten approached many times. They're like, hey, I'm going to start this thing. And I go, okay. Whenever you're ready, let me know. Mm. And then like, I'll join it or whatever it is you want to do, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, we get to me hosting Turner Classic Movies last summer for Black Experience on Film, and I was sitting there with the head of programming and the general manager of TCM, these people who are in charge of starting shows.
Right.
And they had me in a corner. They literally like bottlenecked me into like this corner, and they were like, Clayton, does anything like this exist for Latinos? And I was there as a part of the African American Film Critics Association with them, and I said, no, it doesn't. They go, Clayton, you know, if you started something like this, we would totally do a Hispanic experience on film.
Oh, wow.
And the minute she said that, I was like, I owe every Latino in the world the opportunity to let this happen. So I'm not saying that this is going to happen one day, but I could never use my platform that is very much about championing diversity in film and diversity and inclusion, and especially for journalists, and then know that the head of programming told me if I started this, they would do something for Latino writers out there. And I said, okay, so I guess I got to do it now. And that's where we are. And I didn't do it by myself. I had a steering committee filled with some really talented people, Tony Gonzalez, Nikki Cruz, and Kiko Martinez. And it's in the early phases. We had our first awards, but it's an honor to kind of get it started, and hopefully it can continue to grow.
Historic moment, no doubt.
Yeah.
Clayton, what can we expect from Lehigh in the early years here? Do you have some main objectives going forward?
I mean, obviously it's just like getting Latino voices heard and Latino films cited. But the next big venture, we had our first Latino Entertainment Film Awards this past January, and we're going to be opening the division for television critics this summer to have the first TV awards, because we want them to exist separately. And you know, we're going to keep like expanding beyond there. We're going to go into music, we're going to go into Broadway and stuff like that. So we have a lot of big plans, you know, because Latino journalists are all over and we come in different shapes and sizes and in different eras of entertainment, and you know, we should all be under the same umbrella, learning from one another and inspiring the next generation to pursue a career in journalism, because there ain't many of us out there. I stand on red carpets all the time. I look to my left, I look to my right, and I don't see a lot of people that look like me. So,
well, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about next. I mean, first of all, it's a historic undertaking. I think it's so badly needed, especially with, like you've mentioned, the lack of diversification and lack of minority representation in this film criticism world.
Yeah.
Have you had any kind of difficulties that you can speak on, or any kind of roadblocks you've run into that maybe were unexpected?
So, I mean, yes and no. So I can't blame it on the world of like, you know, because I'm Latino and Black, you know, I never got the opportunities that everyone else had. What I will say that I was not presented that this was a potential career for myself until I was well into my adult years. I mean, award circuits now, we are finishing our 10th year, and I never knew I could be a critic until I became a critic. So there was no one in my upbringing like telling me like, hey, you should like, you know, write about film criticism. I always was chasing like, I want to be an actor. And that was what I said when I was a kid. I was like, I want to be an actor when I grow up. I want to win an Academy Award. But because I didn't, no one taught me how to interpret my love for film and what it really meant and how it can be something else. All I knew was, oh, if you like film, you become an actor. So as I was growing up, I knew I watched a lot of movies. And I watch a lot of movies that were accessible to me, because obviously I grew up in the era of VHSs and stuff like that.
Right.
So, and going to like a movie rental store. And I don't come from a family that's full of like, you know, the Fellini lovers and stuff. I very much by myself. So I discovered a lot of that stuff much later in life. So, you know, I think I was just someone that always wanted the opportunity to be heard. And I'm taking it now. And yes, it's difficult. And I don't want to just say like, it's because I'm a minority, I'm not making it.
Right.
I mean, a lot of it was I had to create my own avenue, and award circuit was my avenue. And I feel like I'm getting it done. Listen, film criticism is the hardest job to get in the country, because it's the best job to have. There are only on average about 200 paid film critic jobs, full-time film critic jobs in the entire country.
Right.
So those people, you have to either wait for them to die and then hope when they die, you're next in line. So rather than wait online, I was like, I'll make my own line. And that's where I am now.
That's awesome, Clayton. You've really inspired us over the years.
Absolutely.
We were listening to you and reading Award Circuit for years before we started our podcast here. You're like almost a godfather of all this, you know, grassroots film Twitter right now. And it's I know Matt Negley and Next Best Picture, they said the same. And, you know, we really feel a kinship there to you. So I'm wondering what exactly spurs on the fact that you go from being a film lover and you have this career path that you're trying to forge, but how do you exactly start Award Circuit? Does it start really small and then just grow with the community, or did you have that 5 or 10 year plan going in?
So two things that go with that. I'm gonna use like the acting term a little bit here. Luck is a lot of part of it, you know. And luck and timing was really that those kind of go together. I mean, I started when not everyone wanted to become a critic. Like, I get asked a lot, like, "Hey, I'm thinking about starting a blog. I want to be a critic," you know, blah blah blah. And,
sure.
And typically I my
yeah. And by the way, answer, can you give us career advice now?
Sure, yeah, please. So you're not gonna like it. So yeah. I tell people don't do it. Because, and perfect. This is why. And this, and it's not because of the selfish thing. Like, I don't want competition or anything like that. I do it because I kind of do this hard knock truth to them, and I say,
yeah,
what are you gonna say that someone else isn't already saying? Mm. What you have to offer that no one else is offering right now? Because right now it's oversaturated noise.
Absolutely.
Like, everyone is out there. Film Twitter is a nightmare. I want to die every day. So what is it you're going to do that's so different? And they're going to be like, oh, it's just that, like, you know, I like the Oscars. I want to predict them. Great. You can do that on your own free time. Why should anyone read your stuff and want to like follow it? So you have to like literally have to sit down and think about those questions. And then the second big thing is you got to write. Mm-hmm. You don't understand how many people come to Award Circuit all the time and they go, "Listen, Clayton, I would love to write for you," because I pride myself on giving people a platform. I don't look for all the Owen Gleiberman's and, you know, and Peter Travers out there. Mm-hmm. I pride myself on giving people who don't have a strong background in journalism and giving them a platform to have their voice heard. You know, it's the hardest thing to get them to do. Write.
Yeah.
They don't do it because you think this is all fun and games. Like, all I need to do is watch a movie and then write about it. Well, try sitting at a film festival and watching 5 movies in a row and then go home and write about them afterwards. It is exhausting. So it's a great gig. I'm not saying it's not great, but I'm not saying it's easy either. I'm gonna quote Tom Hanks, League of Their Own. You know, if it was hard, everyone would do it. The hard is what makes it great. Like, that is exactly how it is. So
I love that you casually just dropped that. Casually dropping Tom Hanks quotes. You're definitely we're talking to the right guy.
Listen, R.I.P. Penny Marshall all the time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Great movie. And there's no crying in movie podcasts.
Yeah.
Let's dive in now. It's a fascinating story. It's really heartwarming to hear that you've been like this trailblazer, whether it's you growing up watching these films from these lesser known directors and getting into the artistic side of it. And then now you've translated that into you spearheading not only the Leha movement and the Leha Foundation, but being this opportunity, this kingmaker in a way, bringing in these people without these journalistic backgrounds. I think that's just really, really cool. I just wanted to give you props for that as well.
Yeah,
that's not something that. Not a lot of people would do in your position. I think that's awesome that you are. Let's dive into the award season, the Oscars that just wrapped up last night. Talk about award season in general before we talk about specific categories that happened. Is there any kind of theme that you saw throughout this award season? Do you have anything that made this award season that you saw as a reason for why it was so damn unpredictable?
An evolving, changing academy.
You think that was it?
Oh, it's what it's been for 3 years.
Mm.
We've been shifting in this direction for a long time. Mm-hmm. No one wanted to believe it. And then we got here, and then now we're here. We actually, more so, it's a changing academy, but I honestly I've used this a few times today, so I'm going to replicate some radio talk here.
We'll only hold it against you a little. Go ahead.
Listen, I think the easiest comparison I can do is to our current state in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and I'm going to put it this way, we had in regards to the academy, we had a really great black president. They were doing such great things and they were doing amazing things. And then some white guy came and messed it all up.
That is a fantastic analogy I had not thought of, but that makes a lot of sense.
So with that now, we are actually seeing the clash of two different Academy voters that are trying to make their stance on film. And I think you saw a lot of them yesterday get Black Panther 3 Oscars. Mm-hmm. And then you saw a lot of them get Vice makeup and hairstyling, Green Book original screenplay, and Green Book best picture. So I think you are seeing the clash of those two. It's the clash of the Titans now. One is going to lose. Spoiler alert, it is the older Academy. But just because, I mean, they're going to die one day. That's what happens. Life moves on.
Right.
And then we're going to have these new, I mean, look, 1,500 people in 3 years, they are changing the whole thing. I mean, you saw it in the nominations, you know, like they, as much as it's divisive, I know people like want to die talking about Rami Malek winning best actor, but listen, we had three people of color win acting awards yesterday. That does not happen.
No,
it doesn't.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was fantastic to see. And you know, people are all pissed, like, you know, Mahershala Ali, oh my God, you know, went for Green Book and Green Book's so terrible and blah, 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 blah. But how many, like, multiple Academy Award winners have you had for such crappy, I don't know if I can curse here, but, like, crappy, sure. Shitty performance.
You can shitty, say like, whatever movie, you want.
Yeah. You know, whatever. But, yeah, and you know, we just like, yeah, that's right. Like, listen, I mean, it's controversial. Like, Gene Hackman's second win is the most annoying thing in my life, that Unforgiven, like the most annoying thing. But like, yeah, we're like, yeah, he won for Unforgiven. He won for a Best Picture winner. And I don't think that deserved to win Best Picture that year. You know, like we just do it. But you take the good with the bad. Preferential ballot, which everyone is really excited to like to throw into a fire right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yep.
It is, but it is because of preferential ballot that Moonlight is the Best Picture winner. It's because preferential ballot that Spotlight is the Best Picture winner, and Birdman and things like that. That, like, you have to take the good with the bad. So for every one of those, there's a Green Book that comes up the middle and is able to snag Best Picture from Roma. If this was a one and done balloting system, Roma's your Best Picture winner today. Right. No doubt about it. I'm telling you, it had the most number one votes in the first round. It just didn't have the 50% plus one. And that was the question I posed on my podcast and to everyone on Award Circuit for this entire phase two. It was like, you have to ask yourself, does Roma have enough votes to clinch first round? If you think it does, you choose it for best picture. If you think it's going to come up short, it's not going to win on preferential ballot. You have to go with something else.
That's some serious inside baseball. I wish I knew that. I listened to that going in and we weren't recording too many podcasts. But Clayton, you make these predictions year round. I'm wondering at which point in award season, was there a win that made you just think, like with the Bohemian Rhapsody Best Picture, drama and Globes or something? Was there a moment during award season where you're like, this is just silly and the next 3 months are going to be insane? Did you have one of those Eureka moments?
I'm trying to think. You know, it's funny when you go to Award Circuit and you kind of see my predictions, you can go back in time and see what I was doing and how stupid I was at certain points in the year. But I think that, like, Bohemian winning film editing, I think I came to that maybe like in December or like
really? That early.
Yeah, I think I got it pretty early because I was like, oh, this is like going to happen. Like, this is where, you know, we land when it's all said and done. You know, it's funny, the last prediction of the year before we got into January, so right before voting opened for Academy members,
right,
I had the predicted Best Picture nominees 1 through 8, like literally had them. And I tell you, if you go back like 2 weeks ago, if you took my predictions from 2 weeks ago for final voting, I'm 20 for 24, 19 for 24 on Oscar night. It's just that as time goes on and all these guilds started handing stuff out, it made you just second guess yourself. Like I'm the only quote unquote Oscar pundit that's like professional that predicted The Favorite to win Best Picture. Because if you listen, it's so weird. If you listen to my podcast, which we did the Sunday before I released my predictions, nothing I said there is what I put up on Monday, because that night Writers Guild happened. And then I said, WTF.
Oh yeah. Oh shit.
So then I said, oh, and then at that point I just went YOLO and I did The Favorite. and it had the favorite winning like five on the night, which would have been the most wins for Best Picture winner since The Artist in 2011.
I noticed you had that in your predictions.
Because you know what I kept – I think I compared it to the Emmys 2013, mm-hmm. the year that Merritt Weaver won for Nurse Jackie.
Yeah.
That entire night, Emmys did stuff that no one ever saw before. Like, we were like, what? Like, every turn, we're like, who's winning this? Like, it was just all of that. And I was like, I think we're going to get to a point when the Academy starts doing that.
Just and that's where shooting I was. From the hip. Was there any point, I mean, I know you touched on how you said the favorite was your Best Picture leader. Was there any point during the night when you were watching that you figured, okay, maybe the favorite is going to win, or just the opposite? Was there any point where you thought, oh boy, the favorite's in trouble for my Best Picture pick?
Once it lost production and costume,
yeah.
I was like, I'm not going to win my Oscar pool this year. This is going terrible. But you know what's so funny about that? Once the favorite lost original screenplay, I was like, oh, it joins True Grit, Gangs of New York, and American Hustle as 0 for 10s.
Yeah.
Wow. And then Best Actress happened. I was like, oh, so I just know nothing anymore. I just know nothing going into this. And listen, I'm sure you guys probably talked about it, and people have probably heard me talk about this ad nauseum now, but I'm going to repeat it again.
Please.
Whatever was going to win Best Picture, history was being broken, and that was the big difference. That's why when you walked in, you had to just be like, whatever, because nothing made sense. And Green Book winning still doesn't make sense in a vacuum.
No, right.
So dropping it here, Green Book is the first film in history to win Best Picture without a director nomination and SAG Ensemble together.
Oh, good Lord.
So that's fascinating. Held this SAG Ensemble stat over our heads for like years now. We're like, if you don't get nominated for SAG Ensemble, you don't win Best Picture. And it was solidified when La La Land lost, right? We were like, stat holds together. Mm-hmm. And then Shape of Water came last year and they said, wait, let me show you how it's done. And then Green Book came and said, yep, we'll make this the norm. So when that happened, it was like we just knew Roma was going to make history because that, I mean, foreign film, streaming service.
Yep.
First time it would have won without a Globe and SAG Ensemble nominations, you know, and it would have been the first since Birdman to win without editing. So it was just like all these different things, like A Star Is Born, assuming it won Best Picture, which I know it doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. but I think it was kind of close. I'm not going to say like it was like number two, but I want to say it was kind of up there. If Star Is Born had won Best Picture and let's say Best Song, it would have been the first film since Rebecca in 1941 to win Best Picture without any above the line Oscars going with it, and the first since Grand Hotel to win without directing and editing noms.
So
1932. That's history for you.
So you are the stat geek extraordinaire. We can't get over how many you just dropped on our heads. I love it.
But now I have all this knowledge with nothing to do with
it. You got nowhere to go with it. Yeah.
I'm wondering if the other kind of big shock of the night, I wonder how you read it. Olivia Colman defeats Glenn Close. Is that more of kind of a traditional battle where they both have a resume and, you know, Glenn Close was the favorite, but
no pun intended.
Yeah.
Without the U, yeah.
Colman had her wins as well. So how do you think Olivia Colman gets the Academy votes at the end of the day?
Well, first of all, side note, by the way, mm-hmm. I can't write The Favorite like a normal sentence anymore.
Isn't that so bad? It totally took over the English.
Forever.
Yeah.
It's ruined me forever.
The same way.
So yeah, just that. Honestly, so I think, I mean, this is foot in my mouth. I said when I went to TIFF, Glenn Close is winning an Academy Award this year and you guys just need to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Like I called it then and I said, and no one believed it then. They were like, she's not even gonna get nominated. I was like, y'all are stupid. Like it is her year. Like it is just going to break her way. And at that moment we knew, like I just saw A Star Is Born. Right. And I was like, oh, it's all contingent on how great Gaga was. And I said, all right, if Gaga is like transformative or whatever, then whatever. But if it's not Gaga, it's nobody, and Close is winning. So then we get through this. Then we're getting through the season, and people are still doubting Glenn Close, even up until Globe and SAG noms. They're like, it's not going to happen. So we get to Oscar night. And at that point, I was comparing her to Julianne Moore's Still Alice. when she won Best Actress, and like no one was touching her. I did acknowledge that Julianne Moore, I think, won a plurality of vote. Like, I think she annihilated her competition.
Right.
But I did acknowledge that Glenn Close is going to win, but this is much closer than it probably should be. I think I knew Olivia Colman was a spoiler, because at that point, and no one realized this. This is, I call this the Christian Bale American Hustle nomination, that we act surprised. But if you look at the paperwork and the resume, you're like, oh, like, why didn't we see this? You feel stupid.
Right.
Olivia Colman, with the exception of SAG, won an acting award at every award show this year.
And people don't realize that with the Critics' Choice, because she didn't win the Best Actress there.
Yes, and she wasn't there.
Right.
So she won Globe, she won BAFTA. Like, for us to think that Glenn Close was so far ahead, then you look and you're like, damn, like, I just didn't see it. I've never been so conflicted in a win in my entire career, my entire life.
Right.
I've never been so simultaneously happy and devastated.
Oh God, I think you and everyone, yeah.
Because we all acknowledge that Glenn Close is a legend, but we all know Olivia Colman's performance was way better. and we were like, you know what? She's going to lose, but you know what? She's going to lose to Glenn Close, and we're just going to hope we can get Olivia Colman back here one day and make up for it. Glenn Close now is 0-7, and it is a hard knock life.
So what do you think Glenn Close is doing today? Is she hiking in the woods a la Hillary?
No. She is speaking with the director and writer of Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, just tweeted that.
We just tweeted
that before calling you.
As fast as possible.
Great minds. Oh, yes.
Yeah. But listen, I'll be honest, and I hope I'm wrong, but I'm just going to be honest. I don't think she's coming back. I think this was the last shot for her.
Wow.
And I think we just now need to get, I mean, I hate to do this, and like, because I feel like we acknowledge it's the end,
right?
But we just need to get her to the Governor's Awards and get her an honorary.
It kind of does feel that way, right? I mean, it's sad to say.
She was going to be the third oldest winner in the category's history,
right? Oh God, I'm not over it personally. The heartbreak.
Yeah,
I know you said you talked on Circuit Breaker. You mentioned you talked to almost 50 members, voting members of the Academy.
Yeah.
In regards to if you ever talked to them about the Best Actress race or Glenn Close specifically, did the idea of like having her lifetime achievement status, quote unquote, like this being her seventh nomination, did that come up?
I put on my podcast today that went up today that was like, those 50 people are pieces of shit. They helped me at all. They did not help me one little bit. They are assholes. Either they lied to me or they're just not good sources anymore. Because like literally there were a few of them had said they were voting for Glenn Close because they just knew they had to, they were supposed to.
Right. I would think that would have been the tiebreaker. Yeah. It's her time.
And it was weird because Olivia Colman was voted for like in a lot of places, but wasn't. And now it's like Beautiful Mind. Like you see the connection, you start crying. It's like people were voting for Olivia Colman, but not going the favorite down the line. Mm. But I had seen a lot of people who were voting for Marina Di Tavera voting for Yalitza. Like that was down the line a lot.
Interesting. Wow.
So that's why I kind of thought if there was an upset coming in supporting actress, Marina Di Tavera was going to be it. I thought everyone that voted for Yalitza was going to vote for Marina, and because supporting actress I think was razor thin in votes within each other,
right,
she was going to step into a win by accident almost. Like it would have been what it was. But I mean, I guess Yalitza had been like fourth in votes, probably third or fourth in votes in her lineup.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that support. I mean, everyone, the punditry was on top of supporting actress being wide open. But it's just funny talking to the different major players in the industry. Like yourself, taking to the way you attacked it, you're saying, you know, Marina Di Tavera would have had an inroad. We talked to Scott Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. He suggested pretty much the same thinking, but that Amy Adams might have been the pick because of that, nobody really knowing what to do. So it's just funny hearing the big names, and it's just proofs that nobody knew what was going on this whole season. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
One of the highlights that we all did share in last night or in the Academy Awards was Spike Lee finally getting crowned. That had to be a top three moment, at least for everyone on the night, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I'm baffled they did it.
Really?
Because he was someone I thought would never win an Oscar because he's too prickly.
Oh.
He does not kiss babies. He does not play the game, as shown by all the press coverage today.
Yeah.
That, you know, like he is a controversial figure, and he's also he's a living, breathing example of the split between the two academies that exist now. Mm-hmm. Because there's an academy that says, nope, we want nothing to do with him. And there's that new academy that says, you better respect your elders and know who you're talking to.
Makes sense.
That's Spike Lee. We need to give him an Oscar now. And then they do it. So,
well, he wasn't without his own controversy on the night still. We didn't have a chance to report on this yet. I don't know if you did in your latest episode of Circuit Breaker, but do you have any thoughts you can share with us about Spike Lee reportedly leaving the auditorium once Green Book was announced? Anything he said in the post press conference, how he thought it was the wrong decision?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I think he's quoted as saying, like, I think the ref made a bad call. That's exactly what he said.
His fellow Knicks fandom, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I wish Oscar voters were as honest like that, you know, in the aftermath, you know. So, I mean, so while I can see everyone's problems with Green Book, and I say this as someone who actually likes it, mm-hmm. and it's like a curse to say that you like Green Book, especially in this, like, you know, era. Yeah,
don't go on the internet right now.
and to be a person of color that says it too, imagine that. So I can see why people don't like it. Then that's a great thing about being a critic and a pundit. If you can see why someone doesn't like it, you know, and still, like, you know, go about it, then that's, you know, it is what it is. Mm. I think it's what makes film Twitter so horrible is how, if you say you like it, like, you're wrong for liking it. And that's where like the big split happens.
Right.
And I think Spike has actually been handling it well. He's just like, yeah, I don't think that should have won, you know? And I think there's like some alt-right swing bullshit media that's trying to make it sound like he's mad because his film didn't win. No, it's just like, I think anything but that, I think he would have been fine with. I don't think he would have been acting like that today. Because if Roma had won, I feel like he would have been super happy for them. Like, I think it would have been ecstatic.
Yeah.
I think it was just about, you know, it was just about Green. He just didn't appreciate it. And like, there's a lot of people who don't. And, you know, I think, and Peter Farrelly is also, like, you know, kind of an asshole right now. And Nick Vallelonga is kind of a piece of shit, you know? So
just a bit on both counts. Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So I think there's a lot of that. I think switch him out with any generic white guy, then I think is whatever. But I will say Green Book is the best thing that ever happened to Crash in the King's Speech, because no one will ever talk shit about those two ever again. Ever.
Great point.
Ever.
So I think all of us would just die to see the numbers at the end of the day. This is a crazy question. Put my conspiracy hat on. But, you know, the Academy retracted the best popular film. They retracted all those changes to the broadcast, 3-hour time limit, the original songs going from 5 to 2 back to 4, and then, of mm-hmm. course, present all 24. Those were like movements, and film Twitter was a part of it, but those were movements where they kind of reneged on what they were going to do. Do you think there's a hope or a prayer that at some point in the chaos that is the next 3 years that you're prophesying over here, is there a chance that they would release the numbers at some point? Or is that
never.
No, just never. Flat answer.
Absolutely not. No. No. Because you – oh, my God. No. No. Because you know why? Because for this exact reason.
Yeah.
You know how we do these brutally honest Oscar ballots? And then you see all the abstains and you hear about all the people that don't fill out their ballots in complete and entirety. And then you're going to see something like Green Book won by one vote and you're going to curse everyone out. Like, everybody gets cursed out. You're going to be like, what the hell? So we'll never see the numbers. The Oscars will never take that heat. They'll never take it on the chin for it. So no, there's no reason for them to, unless there was like unless someone decries that there is some, you know, shadiness going on. There's no reason for them ever to do it.
So all we need is for the Russian bots to get involved and play with the numbers, and we can. Yeah, I see it. All right.
If they crack into Ernst & Young, then you'd make something. Right.
We want to start wrapping up. We know you're pressed for time, and thank you very much for giving us a little bit of your time today. We know you're super busy.
Yeah, no problem.
We just wanted to point out, this is coming out, you're listening to this probably on Tuesday, the 26th. That's the same day that Clayton put out his annual year in advance Oscar picks. That's also served as an inspiration for us. We started doing that last year ourselves, pretty much based off of what you put out there. It's a great comment. Read every year. I can't wait to get into that. Is there any sneak preview you can give us and our listeners here? Maybe a one pick you can reveal as an MMO exclusive here, as they can go over to Award Circuit and read the full article for themselves. Any films you're looking forward to in 2019?
Yeah. I definitely want them to go read it themselves. But I will give you my year in advance prediction winner.
Cool.
And I'm gonna preface it with this. As an Oscar pundit and critics, and this goes for Mike Dose, the two of you guys, right? When you do predictions the day after the Oscars, the week after the Oscars, the first 6 months after the Oscars, you have an opportunity to craft a narrative. This is the only time that you matter in the realm of Oscar, because you can put a highlight on something that, even though it may not be finished filming and it may not have, you know, been seen yet, we haven't even seen a still, a trailer, blah, 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 whatever, you can start a narrative that this can happen and then start forming it. And that can get into distributors' heads, publicists' heads, awards strategists' heads, and they go, ooh, that can be our angle for something like that. And we can push the narrative. So
we're talking to a pro here. I love this. I love this setup.
Inspiring. I got goosebumps.
Yeah. So I say that because my year in advance winner is Cassie Lemon's Harriet, the Harriet Tubman biopic.
Wow.
That stars Cynthia Erivo. So I think we're going to come back off this whitewash Green Book year and give the first African-American woman best director, first African-American period, but for African-American woman best director, and give Harriet best picture with Cynthia Erivo winning best actress.
Oh, I really like that. I really like that sneaky pick. Yeah. I can't wait to read that whole article. Definitely go over our listeners. Go check out awardscircuit.com. One of the best articles of the year.
Yeah. But listen, for all the fan heads out there, yes, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is up there too. And yes, you can go with it all you want. Yeah, go ahead.
Don't go yelling at Clayton on Twitter here.
You could just do it. I mean, everyone's going to do it. Might as well. So yeah, it would be great to have Tarantino and Scorsese and The Race. And we probably will. But come on, let's just go a little. We can get a little fun with it.
So the Award Circuit community is just an awesome place to be. You got some exciting new things happening there, Clayton, with the Circuit Hubs.
Yeah, so Circuit Hub is our one-stop shop for all your awards predictions. We actually just relaunched our Circuit Center, where general readers and lovers of film like yourselves, like Clayton's going to make his predictions. The article comes out tomorrow. The official rankings will be out on Monday, this coming Monday. So that's when you'll be able to see the actual rankings in every category, like 1 through 100, and see where everything ranks there.
Oh, wow.
But on that day, Monday, you guys can go into the Circuit Center and make your own predictions, and it'll keep track of your predictions all year long the same way that it does for me. So you guys can go there and, you know, be part of the conversation. You can create leagues, have your own little chat rooms and stuff like that. You know, Mike Dose will be there, and then you guys can like talk about how great their predictions are or how terrible Clayton's are, because that's what always happens.
I think you're being a little too humble there, but I get
so much flack for the year in advance. I mean, listen, I say this also as the guy who predicted To the Wonder to win Best Picture one year because I thought it was Terrence Malick's year, and then, you know, life happened.
Well, we'll definitely be checking that out. And once again, we thank you for coming on here. Clayton Davis, awardscircuit.com, the Circuit Breaker podcast. Go check out Circuit Hub over there on awardscircuit.com as well. We definitely will be doing so once that goes totally live on Monday, like you said. MMO tradition here. Just the last question, we want to get you out of here. We always ask our guests to pitch us what their idea of the worst movie possible would or could be. So if you don't mind using all your wealth of knowledge and statistical trends here that you've already exposed our audience to, if you could just indulge us, what is Clayton Davis's worst movie possible?
Oh, I mean, come on, guys. Here we go. Listen, in in classic Oscar chasing that we should do at every turn when you're pitching these movies.
Of course.
It is the second Holocaust brought into 2019.
Oh, God.
But instead of it all happening here, it happens in a rebuilt Twin Towers in New York City.
Oh, no.
Where Robert Pattinson scales the building with Tom Cruise to go save them before the building goes down again. It is epic filmmaking directed by Michael Bay. Yes.
Oh, no!
That is new level of horror. You are the master of this question. That's great.
Wow. That was bad. Yeah, correct. That's an awful film.
That's the worst one.
Great job.
Oh, wait. Anyway, there's one more thing. Yeah. You just got to end it right. Because there's at the end, when the hero is getting rid of one of the new Nazis before he kills someone, he's going to tell the guy, go building yourself. That's where it comes alive. That's where.
Anyway, something that AFI will no doubt put on their most famous quotes list after a little bit. God. My Lord, what a pitch.
The TIFF Audience Award, get ready. It's my dream.
That is something else. Clayton Davis, thank you very, very much for giving us a little bit of your time and recapping Oscars 2019. Awesome. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
We'll talk.
Have a good night.
You too.
Good week. Have a good year.
Yeah, get some sleep yourself, too, as well. Yeah. Great job.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, another great interview. We thank very much Clayton Davis. Very, very hilarious, very wise. And my Lord, is he just a walking encyclopedia of Oscars and awards knowledge, huh?
Look, we only interview the people that we really like and respect and that we're fans of.
Yeah.
So we're 4 for 4 in that regard. We've been listening to Awards Circuit, their podcast, Circuit Breaker, for a long time. We've been going to their website. Evidence is the last year of podcasts we've done. We've cited Clayton Davis many times in terms of his year-round predictions. So he's awesome at that. And he's really a go-to resource for us, and it was great to get the chance to chat with him and talk bio, and as well as this award season, which those are theories and takes that if we didn't talk to him, we wouldn't have gotten.
It's that's really great, fascinating great having letting someone like that, an Oscar pundit of that kind of esteem, let you peek behind the curtain and get you in on his thinking and where he follows the trails, where he sees the breadcrumbs leading. I also think it's fascinating that he uses his position that he's built up for good, a force of good,
yes,
and really trying to help out other people, trying to make the diversification of film criticism a more well-known and a more talked-about venture. I think that's extremely worthwhile. Be sure to check out at Awards Circuit. That's Clayton Davis's Twitter profile. Be sure to check out LEJA Latino over on Twitter. That's the Lehas, obviously, their account there. I could not be more grateful, and thank you to Clayton Davis and Awards Circuit in general. Be sure to check out their Circuit Hub and Clayton Davis's Oscar Predictions article, the Way Too Early Oscars Predictions that we talked about there. A lot of fun. And grateful, thank you for him for giving us a pick, an exclusive pick there, a little insight.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll definitely be looking at it as well. We'll definitely be going into the Circuit Hub. That sounds like a real fun way to keep track of all our predictions. It keeps it organized. It's so much easier than Google documenting the shit out of everything. So I'm very grateful for that. That sounds like it's tailor-made for us, Mike. And Award Circuit, we've always loved them, and we'll be citing them in the near future. It was great to hear all those theories. However, I'm shaken to the bone that he thinks it's going to get crazier and crazier in the years to come because of this clash that he said. That was fascinating.
It
I didn't
really
think of it
is,
that way.
Yeah, it really is. Maybe a bit of a civil war brewing on inside the Academy there, and it's going to be really fascinating to see how that shakes out and affects future races. Like he said, they're going to get some right and they're going to get some wrong, and this happens to be a mix of both, and maybe that's the times are a change in here as far as the Academy goes and voting with Oscars 2018-19, but that's the film year 2018. We're putting it to bed. Might have a little more commentary on it, but thank you to Clayton. Thank you to Scott Feinberg. We interviewed both of them, both the Hollywood Reporter and Awards Circuit, giving us some insight during Oscars week here in the lead up, and we cannot be more thankful to them for that. Thank you to you, dear listener. We were just in the midst of our best week ever and some of our best days ever as well, and we cannot thank you guys enough. If there's anything that you want to pass comments on, any of our Oscar Sprint profiles covering 2018 contenders, any of our award show or category reviews covering the Oscars, any of the lead up we did, we love hearing from you. We love interacting with you. You can check us out at Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, at MM and Oscar on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, and Mike, Mike, and Oscar over on Reddit. We're available everywhere you do hear podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, etc., etc. Michael, Another big interview. MMO Interviews is in the books. Clayton Davis Award Circuit in the books. What do we have for final words of wisdom here?
There's a lot of great stuff on awardcircuit.com. The shelf life is long for that, and there's a lot of great episodes and, you know, our Mike and Oscar feed, because, you know, we're all doing a movie review thing. They have the Akkas, we have the MMOs, and you can listen to that year-round. And I listened to the MMOs from last year just this morning and had a blast listening to that. So if you're just coming to us now, you know, do please check out that backlog of episodes. It is massive. We have gone crazy recording 9 days in a row now, Michael.
My God, I'm tired.
We're tired, and we're going to finally rest for a day or two before we drop one more episode later in the week on our way too early Oscars as well. So
yeah, and an homage to Clayton Davis there and his article about the way too early Oscars prediction coming out today. You could read that, like we said, Tuesday, February 26th is when he dropped that. We will also be soon. Our next episode, we think, is going to be our way too early Oscars prediction. So be sure to come back for that, and we'll see if we have any crossover between what Clayton picked earlier in this episode and what we have in store.
Yeah, I could not match any wisdom, but I did promo the shit out of what we do.
All right, guys, like we say, when reality sucks, come over here, watch movies and all the award shows with us. If you're a movie fan or an award season junkie, welcome home. We will see you very soon, but just for the love of God, we're going to actually sleep now.
We can sleep. See ya.